During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
He covers the Chiefs.
With that, time's yours.
And you're in that place where you're in the playoffs.
He covers the Royals.
Flair, over there in the middle on the left.
Salvador, just take us through your emotions.
He covers college sports.
But one great thing about the conference tournament, where I think it gives teams hope.
And every now and then, he likes a good laugh.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
He's Blair Kirkhoff of the Kansas City Star on the program.
Welcome back into the program. We will have Blair Kirkhoff on the line here in just a second. He'll be calling us back. He's wrapping something up really quickly as we will talk to Blair about, you know, whatever, really. Talk about whatever we want to talk about, because Blair Kirkhoff has covered everything. A lot of topics to talk to Blair about today on the program when we catch up with him. In the meantime, I'm going to give you a couple of Chiefs sound bites, as we've talked quite a bit today earlier. Is our chance to talk to Carlos Dunlap today. We had Stephen St. John on from St. Joseph at the Stony Creek Inn to talk about that and play some Carlos Dunlap bites. But we'll hear from the defensive coordinator as well about Dunlap, who looks to be a pretty nice signing for the Chiefs. This is someone who looks to help this team get the quarterback on the ground, which they did not do well enough last year at all. They just didn't do a good enough job. Pressures are pressures, but they didn't get anyone on the ground like they should. Dunlap has been a very consistent pass rusher over his career, so they think he can get that done. Now, he didn't go out there and do a whole lot of work today, but he was out there. And Steve Spagnuolo told us what he's seen so far from Carlos Dunlap.
The first thing that sticks out is the length. I remember the couple years we had TK, right? And I always thought that was nice to have inside or outside, because I think, you know, that's tough for quarterbacks. So that's the first thing. It's another veteran, you know, that's been through the thick of things. So I think that's an advantage. And then short of that, I mean, I've obviously seen him play, not a lot. You know, I watched a little bit of tape, but it's really going to be us figuring out what he can do, you know, where to put him. There's a lot of that going on right now, and I'm not sure. I don't think he got a rep there in the 10-10-10 because he's not really up to speed on what we're doing. But I think Andy probably said same thing with Orlando Brown, although Orlando Brown's been here, so he knows what he's doing. But it's going to be a little bit of a ramp up, and we kind of, when he feels like he's got it down, we'll get him in there and get him rolling.
Dunlap should be a good player for this team, and he told us he wants to eat whenever, right? First down, second down. He'd like to be an every down guy. You understand that third down is when a lot of sacks come. That's when you end up passing situations and you get the quarterback to the ground, and that's an important time to have your money makers out there doing that. But Dunlap's got some ideas in his head. He's got 96 sacks, like to get to 100. He's never won a playoff game. Didn't get to play in a lot of playoff games at his time in Cincinnati. He did play in a playoff game with Seattle a couple of years ago, and it kind of fell apart at the end for him. They ended up losing to the Rams. But, you know, he's someone who I think can definitely help this team, and in a lot of ways. He's a veteran. You know, Melvin Ingram didn't get the quarterback on the ground a lot last year, but he affected plays, and he set the edge, as they like to say. And Dunlap hopes he can be that kind of player. And I think another thing to look at with Dunlap is the fact that he can knock passes down too. That's a big deal for him. He's 6'6", 285, gets his hands in the air, affects a lot of passes, so that's important as well. If you're not going to get to the quarterback, I'd rather have a pass defense than a pressure, honestly, because the pass defense, very rarely is that ball caught. Sometimes you make a pressure and they'll still make a play. So we think he's going to be a good player for this team.
And how often does a defended pass jump up and
turn into a pick?
Yeah. I mean, not to bring up some pain, but wasn't the D Ford offside call, wasn't that a tipped ball that led to that pick that would have, had it counted, sent the Chiefs to the Super Bowl? I'm looking, looks like I was trying to find some old Dunlap since he'll be facing a former quarterback this year. When he faced Mahomes, who is now his teammate, I could only find that matchup once. I believe that was the Sunday Night Football game in 2018.
Right.
where the Chiefs crushed the Bengals. According to that, Dunlap had one sack.
Yeah. It wasn't a lot there. That was a rough go for the Bengals that day. It was a Sunday night game, and the Chiefs were very, very impressive during that game for sure. Very, very impressive. You heard that phone ringing. I believe that's probably Blair Kirchhoff from what I'm looking at. Blair Kirchhoff will join us now. Blair, thanks so much for your time today. How you doing?
I'm good, Todd. How about yourself?
You know, we're getting after it. We're getting through this. It's the dog days of training camp for us right now, right? That's what it is.
I think if you look at a calendar, we're either a day before or the day of halfway. If you start it when when Mahomes and the rookies showed up, I think we're right at about halfway home.
Yeah, I know you weren't at camp today, but we've been talking about Carlos Dunlap being made available today. And let's just briefly talk a little bit of Chiefs here. I think he is going to be an important player for this team. And he didn't particularly want to go sign anywhere in, you know, March, apparently. He's a veteran. He knows what he's doing. He was patient, took his time to find a place he wanted to be. And he found this place. And I think getting signed now it's a little bit like Orlando Brown. I'd rather have you sign now and get in and learn your system and get yourself in playing shape than wait too long. Do you think Dunlap can be someone who helps this team out quite a bit this year?
I do, and I know he thinks he's going to help out, and he's going to help out on more than passing downs. That was the most surprising thing I heard from his interview today was he's planning on playing a lot of downs. And this is a guy who played 38% of the snaps for the Seahawks last year, and, you know, he's saying he wants to be on the field for first and second down as well as third down. So I'm not sure that's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see. But I thought he had a pretty interesting podium session today where he's really in tune with his sack numbers, his career sack numbers, and he's four away from 100. And he talked about how important that was to get that milestone and to go even beyond that. And he was an interesting guy today. If he can bring his, six, seven, eight sacks per season to this team, that'll be quite an upgrade from what the Chiefs had a year ago. And you add that to the mix, and if you want to believe Frank Clark is, looking better, and Steve Spagnuolo said as much today, and you want to believe all the stuff we're hearing about George Karlaftis, maybe that defensive end position does get, a lot better and a lot more productive this year.
Yeah, I want to believe a lot of those things. Now, it's camp,
yeah,
right? So we want to believe all that stuff we see in here, and we hope that is the case. On Dunlap, it is interesting. A lot of these guys, they don't pay attention. They say, I don't know my stats. He knows exactly where he stands on a lot of these things. So I get it, man. He knows, and that's how you get paid, getting guys. And that's why I think him getting signed on this team this year, and he's making some nice money, right? And he's 33, 34 years old. And you saw last year that Melvin Ingram was 32, about to be 33. He's 33 now, got signed on this team. I think seeing players like that still perform in this league was probably a bit of the wake-up call for Frank Clark, who at this point has made lots of money, okay? There's no doubt about that. He got a great big contract when he came here to the Chiefs. But he's a guy who, it looked like it might have been the end of the road last year with him. He wasn't playing very well. Everyone thought he was someone who was going to get cut because of his contract, and they found a way to renegotiate with him. But he's only 29 years old and barely 29 years old. He should be able to, with his track record, be someone who could go make money for four or five more years. Now, maybe they're one-year deals and all that. But when you're 48 years old, you're not going to have a chance to go make $2 million play football. So I think these things might be wake-up calls for Frank. What did you think of Clark talking, I guess it was Saturday, and the things he said about his life and trying to change things health-wise to make himself a better player?
Yeah, it was Saturday because the press tent was pretty sparse that day. It was a weekend, right? And everybody's got other things to cover on the weekend from a media standpoint. But he was the last guy to the stand that day, and I didn't know what to expect. It had been a while since we had talked to Frank Clark, so wasn't sure what we were going to hear. And he opened up. He was as raw and I'd say refreshing is any player who has spoken publicly, and I really appreciated that from him. You know, going straight to the, you hear from everybody, you know, how much they've improved their diet, they've come back in the best shape of their lives, and all that. That's pretty common chatter at training camp, but you saw it with Frank Clark, and he absolutely was 10, 12 pounds lighter than he was when we saw him a year ago playing, and then he told us why. You know, cutting out the alcohol, and well, he didn't call it alcohol. He said liquor. Cutting out liquor,
yeah.
And so he's not shopping at the convenience store for his beverages. He was
talking about shots out at dinner, and
shots at dinner, and this is a guy who ever since he's been in Kansas City, he's always talked about having stomach issues. And you kind of get a sense why now. I mean, the alcohol never agreed with him, but he's always had them, and he had them last year as well. So I thought that was really interesting, and I appreciated it from him to hear that. And the other part of that was talking to the conversation he had with Andy Reid. And look, Andy Reid would never, or a coach would never volunteer the information that Frank Clark provided, which was, they both agreed it was a bad season for Frank Clark. The coach is going to protect his player in that opportunity, but Frank Clark didn't. He just said, look, Andy and I had a heart-to-heart, and, said, we both know you're a better player than what you showed this year, and I loved hearing that, too. That gives me hope that if a guy can assess himself that honestly and that he knows what he needs to do to improve. And then we heard Steve Spagnuolo today say, from the waist down, that's where Frank gets his power, and that's where he looks like he's improved there this year from the hips down, I should say. And I don't know, it's training camp, we got to take it all with a grain of salt. And even the first game that's on the way, next week from Saturday at Chicago, I don't know how much we're going to learn, but it's been an interesting and fun training camp. If for no other reason, they're addressing the biggest position in need, which was defensive end, and there's so many rookies, so many drafted rookies who, they've been fun to watch and to see what their progress has been in the and you've seen a lot of it too. I mean, the Trent McDuffies and George Karloftis and Brian Cook, just seeing how many of these guys are running with the ones and the twos and. There's just been, I don't know. I just think it's been a lot more interesting in this training camp than some of the previous ones where you knew the Chiefs were going to be good, but you just, it was the same cast, right? Pretty mm-hmm. much the same team as the previous year.
Staying on the topic of Frank Clark, do you get the sense, we've tossed around on the show the possibility of maybe what Frank Clark deals with is something chronic. Do you think that's still in play, or do you think what's going on is he simply was this super athlete, and for so much of his life it didn't matter what he put into his body, he could still perform because he's so genetically blessed, and now he's just gotten to a point where he's realizing how much what he puts into his body matters, or do you think that could still be a possibility?
Well, I always think that is a possibility, that there's a some kind of ailment that has a type of ailment that can affect any human being, even incredibly physically shaped athletes. But I would say that as honest as Frank Clark was with reporters last Saturday, if he had known that, I think he might have shared it, or maybe we didn't ask the question. We were sort of digging around with moving away from alcohol.
Right, the confessional nature of what he was talking about. Yeah,
that's right. And the red meat. That was the other thing he said. He was so. It might be worth going back. Adam, at another media opportunity to ask, or when the locker room's open, which for the first time, after the game next Saturday, it'll be the first time in 2 years that's been the case. So. I think that's an interesting possibility that there could be something, chronic with him.
Yeah, he's had stomach issues for a while, and, listen, a lot of people do. It's tough.
Yep.
But, and I think eventually all these guys, They're young, right? He admitted that too. Man, I went to a party school. I was at Michigan. I was having fun. I'm doing this when you're young, and you do it. And then you see these guys running around here like Tom Brady's 45 years old, and how is he still in the league? He's in the league because everything that goes into his body is calculated and all this stuff. You have to do that sometimes if you want to extend your career. So I think sometimes you learn it the hard way, and better late than never. So we'll see what happens with Frank Clark. I'm rooting for him to do well. And I was kind of taken by what he was talking about with George Karloftis, and really enjoying watching him and helping him. And Steven was telling us earlier today that Carlos Dunlap and Frank Clark were both over there after practice talking to George Karloftis about things. There seems to be a lot of, you know, we're all on the same team here. And they're fighting for jobs too, right? We know that part.
Right.
That's the hard part about these sports. You're up there in camp, and then you have a job, but the other guy just flat out, he wants your job, okay? There's someone out there who wants to work and not have you work. That's the way it goes. But they've got some veterans who are comfortable enough with where they are in their lives that they're really helping people. And we went through that with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes, and I think there's something that's been fostered out at Arrowhead with this regime of people that makes that happen more often than it maybe does in a lot of places.
Maybe. I like to think that, we don't focus on, Denver and, Vegas or even the other teams in the division to the extent, obviously, that we do the Chiefs. But it does seem notable that you're right. Dunlap did mention it today, and Steve Spagnuolo has talked about it. It seems notable that there is this, this mentorship that happens with the young players by the older players here, and it maybe an extension of that was just what Dunlop said today. Another thing he said was, when he got into town on his recruiting visit, got in late, like at 10:30, and at 11:30. The entire staff was in St. Joe was there to greet him. And then he and Andy went in and had some pizza and talked about it. And he talked with other people. And that strikes me as something that falls under the above and beyond category as well, that the Chiefs, when they trying to show a player that they want, that they're willing to do what it takes, go the extra mile to make them feel comfortable. And when you show that, I think a player is willing to do, to show the coaches that, he can return a favor as well. It'll be interesting to see the progress that Karloftis makes this year. He's been running with the ones quite a lot, and I suspect first round draft pick, you kind of expect them to start, and it's a position of need. But he is absolutely getting some help from some tutoring and some help from guys that have been seen as among the best at their positions throughout their careers. So I hope and Karloftis seems very appreciative based on the couple times we've talked with him in the media tent. He's I don't know if we hear that with the other positions though as much as we do with defensive end, and maybe it's just because they have the experienced players there to lend their expertise in a way that maybe not happened at other positions.
Yeah, I think I heard a little bit of it from Justin Reed when we talked to him. He's in a little bit of a different situation because he's learning the defense as well. But he wants to definitely be that mentor and help out, which is good. You just have to have guys like that because you can't have selfishness, because you have to have some selfishness to play and go do that. But you have to have some team about you too, and they've certainly found a way to get that done. We're talking to Blair Kirkhoff. Let's stay on the Chiefs for a little bit before we take a break here. I want to talk to you about Orlando Brown. I think many of us were surprised, not shocked probably, but I think I was resigned to the fact that maybe he wouldn't see St. Joseph this year. It just didn't seem like there was a real reason for him to be there. He was had not signed his tender. He wasn't going to get fined. Dorm beds, the whole nine yards. Then the report came out that he would be there. He did show up Monday, wasn't on the field till Tuesday slightly. He's there. All right. It's good. I said I'm not going to nitpick all this stuff because he's there. And I think it's important for him to be there because I think the wrong signal to send would be to show up a week before the season starts, because that's when you would start getting checks. So he showed me the right things there. What are your thoughts about how important it is for him to be up there and to be a part of this thing? Because that's another thing he could have been very selfish about.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. The my thought was he would come to he would come to camp eventually, but maybe not come to St. Joe at all, right? He'd arrive at that when after the Chiefs play that first preseason game and they return to St. Joe and stay there for I think it's till Thursday, and then when they get ready for their second preseason game,
he'd be on the sideline of the first preseason game at home.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Exactly. And then he would, and then when the Chiefs resume, training at Arrowhead and the facility there, that's when we would see him. And I was already trying to do the calculation. Would that be enough? Enough time for him to work with the team, to be on the field for the first game, and that to me was going to be the debate. And then all of a sudden, we find out Sunday night that he's—I think it was Sunday night—that here he is. He's in St. Joe, and or at least on his way. That I think it was RG3. I think
right.
That ended up breaking the news. His former teammate with the Ravens, and it's like, okay, well, I think he's for a guy who technically didn't hold out by definition, but that's all we all recognize it as. He did hold out. That it was brief, and he made him sent the message, made his case, and had missed all of the OTAs. I thought that's what kind of got me thinking. He's in it for the long haul, and he'll be here for the season, but not training camp. But then he shows up earlier than I thought, and explains himself again to the media and talked about the guaranteed money that he thought should have been that basically was the reason he was holding out and wants to be considered among the best in the position to be honest I don't think he's earned the money that he's asking for or thinks that he should get but it's his right to protest it in the way that's available to the NFL players and now. And I think he understands this. Now he has the opportunity to play in a season and prove that he's worth the money that he wants. The Chiefs didn't think so. At least that's what they said in the gear. I thought the Chiefs' contract offer was very fair.
Yeah, I'm not so sure he's earned the offer the Chiefs gave him myself.
That's right. I think it was a very fair offer based on the rankings and the objective observations that experts have on him. But I got a sense too, and after listening to him and watching him practice for a couple of days, he wanted to be there. He wanted to be in camp. He wanted to be with his teammates. He talked about being a leader, and I don't think you can be a leader from Miami or wherever it is he was training. You can't be a leader on TikTok or Instagram. You got to be there to be a leader, and he's there now, and he's taking every first team snap.
So. Your advice, if you were the agent of Orlando Brown, I'm guessing that your advice would have been sign what the Chiefs gave you.
Yes, that would have been. That would have been my advice to him. First of all, the agent process wasn't normal for him. He had to go. Had one, didn't have one, got one, and wonder who would, how influential a guy like that should be, and you just weren't 100% sure. Anyway, it's kind of a convoluted agent process. But so then the Chiefs' offer becomes, public, in a social media way, and you see that the guaranteed money isn't anywhere near what the Trent Williams and Ronnie Stanley, and I'm sure the agent told him that you're in their league and it shouldn't be 20 million less or whatever it was from a guarantee standpoint, and I think the Chiefs believe that they were absolutely making an incredibly fair offer to a player who has played that position for one full season. And was not, by Pro Football Focus and others, not considered in the elite class of left tackles. Now, I think he's a popular player on the team. He's, I think You know, what was the stat? Something like he allowed 5 or 6 sacks last season based on PFF.
Mm-hmm.
There were some numbers that were, you know, worthy and, you know, that will drive up the value of a contract. But overall, not. I think he should have taken what he was offered last year. I thought it was a fair deal. But if he wants to, I don't know, it's a cliche. It's maybe the overused cliche of the year, bet on himself. That's kind of what he's doing, right, with the franchise tag. He's betting on himself. And the other thing, and I've heard you talk about this, Todd, it's so true. This is a guy who, you know, had such a bad combine that he dropped, you know, his first-round talent, who dropped in the third round and has made less than $7 million of his career. And as we were considering, you know, what Orlando Brown should do or would do, you got to thinking that he's going to leave almost $17 million on the table to make a statement that he didn't like this contract. And that just seemed ridiculous to me that he would consider doing that. And as it turns out, he did not do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Bet on yourself. I hope it works out for him. The Chiefs hope he does well. They hope they have to give
Absolutely.
Another. They hope they do. Now, I think they would have preferred he to sign the contract they had than they'd have him locked up for a couple of years. But we are where we are. He's in camp. That's great. That's great news for the Chiefs. And, you know, hopefully everything works out. And so far, so good. I'm knocking on wood here. You look around. I'm looking all the time. Someone's getting hurt in these other camps. Everything's gone really well for the Chiefs so far. That's a key when you're getting through this stuff for sure. Blair Kirkhoff is on the horn from the Kansas City Star. We're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit. Let's talk some Royals trade deadline stuff and everything that happened there up next here on the program.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Roger Clemens, 60 today. Who was the only Royal to homer off Clemens twice?
We're going to give Blair Kirkhoff of the Star a shot at that. Blair, did you hear that? Who's the only Royal to hit 2 home runs off of Roger Clemens as a Royal?
As a Royal.
As a Royal. I did not get this answer.
I just think based on the timing and the production, I would say Mike Sweeney.
It was earlier than
never,
that.
Sweeney Dog never homered off the
never
Rocket.
Homered.
This is early
okay.
Roger.
Early Rocket, huh? So, mm-hmm. Good Royals, right? The late 80s Royals. How about Danny Tartable?
That was a guess of mine.
Tartable also
you,
never.
That was wrong as well.
Off of the Rocket.
This guy held a Royals record for a long time. That's a good hit, right?
Okay, good. How about not Jose Offerman?
Nope.
I'll
roll you backwards. There have been 8 guys have homered.
Balboni.
There you go, yeah.
Balboni. I'll roll you backwards to 8 guys who have done it most recently. Of course, Ross Gload is going to homer off Roger Clemens.
G-load.
I'm sure even Clemens is like,
who's this guy?
How'd that guy go deep? Jermaine Dye.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Zahn.
Zahnny.
Someone named Chris James.
Oh, yeah. C. James.
1995.
Yeah, yeah.
Gary Gaetti, B-Mac, Brian McCray took the Rocket deep in 93.
There you go, B-Mac. Let's go.
Bo Jackson in 1989, and then Steve Balboni 1 year and 1 day apart. April the 16th of 85, April the 17th of 86.
George never got him then, huh?
Second one was at Boston. George never homered off.
In your face, GB. No homers off the Rocket.
No.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right, Blair Kirkhoff is our guest. Let's stay on the Royals a little bit here, Blair. Trade deadline came. Oh, first off, I almost forgot. Caller number, whatever number Adam decides, pair of tickets to the 100-year anniversary next Thursday. Right now. Caller number 10, you said? 8. 8.
Let's do 8.
Caller number 8 is going to get a pair of tickets to the 100-year anniversary celebration party next week at the Midland. There you go. All right, Adam. Adam, you answer the phone. All right, Blair. All right. Blair, let's talk some Royals trade deadline stuff. It was a long wait till 5 o'clock before the Royals did something on the actual trade deadline day, but they traded Whit Merrifield. A couple of ways to talk about this. Number one, did they get worthwhile things for Whit Merrifield?
Well, I guess I look at it like sort of like the, maybe this isn't fair, but a little bit like Carlos Santana in that they got they got enough, I think, for Merrifield. Just like I think they got more than I expected for Santana. I we'll see. Time will tell if they got enough. I think with all the trades, just about all the trades the Royals made, they're not getting immediate talent, right? We're going to see them in Omaha and in Northwest Arkansas, and I know JJ Piccolo pretty excited about it, having read his comments. I wasn't on the JJ Piccolo press conference the other night, but I think you were, weren't you, Todd? And he seems pretty fired up about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think they like what they got. You're never gonna say, boy, these guys stink. I'm so glad we traded for them. But they,
right.
I think, you tell me if I'm wrong here. Tell me what you think about this. JJ told us the other night that they didn't trade Whit Merrifield because he wasn't vaccinated or anything. But I do think that his comments after the COVID list came out, and then trying to walk them back, and just the look that was for the organization, didn't help Whit Merrifield be someone who was going to be a lifetime Royal. I think they felt like they wanted to do, they wanted a different message, I guess, from their leaders about like being a team player or whatever. Do you think that's kind of about where this thing lies?
Yes, I do think that's the case. That it was going to be difficult for a team that is trying to become younger and has and plenty of young talent in the clubhouse, having to, looking at a player like Whitfield as someone that, who until the last few weeks, right, has done everything that you kind of expect or said everything you'd expect a leader to be. He was such a leader that he was the player rep, the team's player representative. And, how much more of an example can you provide than playing in 553 straight games? So, a leader, in the clubhouse, outside the clubhouse. So, yeah, but then it wasn't important enough for him and nine others to get vaccinated and play a game for the Royals. And listen, what good's your leadership if you're not there to show it? And that's to me was the prevailing wisdom for the Royals front office, and had everything to do with the acceleration of looking for a trade partner for Whit Merrifield. And we can, since it's happened, there has been all sort of chatter about, they should have done it a couple years ago, or could have done it last year, or whenever they could have done it. But I don't remember there being a groundswell of support for moving Whit Merrifield at the trade deadline, either 2 years ago or last year when he made the All-Star team. He was still such a productive player, leading the league in, whatever it was, hits or stolen bases or doubles or triples. He might end up next to, Nick, besides George Brett, is the Royals player that's led the American League in the most statistical categories of anybody in team history. So I think that now if the vaccination incident didn't happen this year, would he have been on the trading block? I think so. Just his performance had fallen so to a point where it was probably time to move on. It's fallen so dramatically, by the way, that it was probably time to move on. But I think it made the call for the Royals easier when the incident of a month or so ago occurred.
Blair Kirkhoff is our guest, and I guess this part doesn't matter yet. Whatever the legacy is going to be what it is when it happens. And I thought Sam McDowell did a nice job in the Star writing about how complicated it is, right?
He is
someone, in my opinion, who wasn't exactly done right by this organization when he was a minor league player, because this is what happens when you're like a 10th round pick and you're a college guy. You don't get the benefit of the doubt the way a signee like Adalberto Mondesi does, or Bobby Witt now, whatever. I mean, Bubba Starling got to be in this organization forever. Bubba Starling never deserved to play at the major leagues. but he got to play in the major leagues, okay? And it took Whit Merrifield a long time to get here. So I get why he has these chip on his shoulder about a lot of things. And I honestly, I don't know why, because I don't know everything that's happened here or there. But it seemed to me like Whit Merrifield would be the perfect player that Ned Yost should love. And it never seemed to jive with those two guys. So it was just kind of always, you know, behind, trying to catch up for Whit. So I get why he wasn't the happiest guy in the world sometimes. But I also get the man, the organization gave him a contract they didn't need to give him. They could have sat there and just played arbitration with him and, you know, not made sure that he was secure for a couple of years. So it is a complicated legacy. I'm going to choose to remember him as a really good ball player who fought really hard and tried. I don't think him, you know, skipping out on the four games by not getting vaccinated is how I'll remember him. But you can't forget it, right?
No, you can't. It's not really fair to him that he was one of 10,
right,
and not one of three.
He's the one who talked about it, right? I mean, that was the thing. And we didn't talk to all 10 of these guys about why they didn't do it.
No, so that's right. We talked to a few, but not all of them, and he did stand up to it. And then I think he didn't understand his message, what he was trying to say, or misunderstood what the reaction would be to it. And listen, maybe Kurt Nelson over at the Royals would have a stronger opinion on this than I would. But do you think his numbers for the Royals warrant a place in the team Hall of Fame? I'm not sure he's there. Not top 10 in hits, even though he got his 1,000th career hit. He's not top 10, and certainly not top 10 in home runs, and you know, a lot of losing teams. So I don't know if he'll ever be a Royals Hall of Famer. I do wonder. I you don't think so, Curtis?
I have an opinion on it, and it's no. I think if he'd stayed a little, maybe he could have stayed. He didn't leave. And put those numbers up a little bit further. There's some black ink. It's as you mentioned, he may end up having more black ink on his register than any Royal not named
Dark
George Brett.
Ink.
But I mean, it's hard to put a guy in the Royals Hall of Fame who didn't play in a postseason game. That's kind of difficult. I'm sure there are guys who have done that for other teams. I think he, whatever the shelf is below that, he probably falls a little bit short. He's on that shelf. Would be my take.
I've wondered if he had been brought up 2 years earlier, and he would have been the enthusiastic rookie second baseman in 2014 instead of Omar Infante. Would that have made a difference in the postseason? And if he was good and he stayed the second baseman, then the Royals don't trade for Ben Zobrist the next year, and maybe not, do what they did in the postseason. So, but those were the couple years, right? 14 and 15. He was probably ready for the major league then, and did not get that opportunity.
It was pretty clear he could hit if he'd come up 2 years earlier and hit the way he did when he got here. He's got a pretty compelling case.
I get confused on when things happen in my life because I'm an older person. Okay, but I remember being out at Royal Spring Training. It was probably 15. It could have been 16. And we're standing out there. You know, you wait outside the little office, and you know the players come walking out. And then you talk to the manager standing on that little knob, and then the players go out there. And George Brett was standing there, and he says, "This is Whit Merrifield. He's a really good player. He's going to be a player for this team." And I'm like, I'd never heard the kid's name before in my life, right? And he's like, "Hey, this is George Brett telling me that I'm going to be a really good player." I'm like, "Hey, I'm going to remember this guy's name." But it still took like 3 years for him to make it through, so I get part of it. I will say this, Blair, just this hour, Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic says Whit Merrifield has been vaccinated and he'll be in Toronto when the Blue Jays return next week. So that was my thought, that this was the question we were all asking ourselves. All we know was he wasn't vaccinated when the Royals went to Toronto, and then we didn't know that if after that happened, hey, listen, if I'm going to get traded somewhere, I think the writing was on the wall, he was going to get traded, that maybe he went and got himself vaccinated because he could go play. So That's the deal. And so that guy's good news for Blue Jays. He'll be a part of it, you know. So
and listen, it's good news for another healthy body now, another vaccinated human being.
Absolutely. All right, Blair. Hey, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. We will catch. Well, Seren will catch back up with you next week, and we'll talk to you soon. Okay.
All right, guys. Great talking to you.
All right, great. There's Blair Kirchhoff joining us on the phone there, talking about that Royal stuff. And this is the thing we kind of talked about yesterday. We don't know if he had gotten vaccinated, because he didn't just go out and tweet, hey, I got a shot. But
a picture of him at the
I do think
CVS that or when something.
Because what he said was he wasn't against it. He just like, listen, I'm a young, healthy person, he said he doesn't take a lot of medicines, pills, whatever. If he didn't want to take it, he didn't want to take it. But the rules to get in the country to where the Royals were gonna go play games was you couldn't go. So I think we heard the disappointment in Dayton Moore's voice talking to Seren. We know that J.J. Piccolo wasn't happy, frustrated about this whole thing. And I think he's known since probably about then that he was probably going to be someone who would get traded. And I think if he can be there next week, they're going to be on the 12th. And if he can play in Toronto next week, that means he didn't get vaccinated yesterday.
Yeah.
Then means he started the process before. So I think he figured out, I have to go do this, and that's the way it's going
to
work.
I would just like to say this puts to bed one of my all-time favorite memes, which was the image from Moneyball of Jonah Hill and Brad Pitt standing there, and Jonah Hill's explaining him, and he goes,
board.
We just traded for Whit Merrifield. He led the league in hits, blah, 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 blah. His one defect is he can't legally enter the stadium or the country where our stadium is.
He can't do it.
But he can now.
Yeah, he can now. So
I did like Blair, ever the optimist, Blair Kirchhoff. Hey, one more vaccinated human being out there. That's a good thing, right?
Yeah. So there you go. That's the news here today that's happened. And you know, when we talked to JJ the other day about it, he's like, this is not my player anymore. He plays for someone else. We're going to talk about it. And I've said many times here, whatever choice you want to make, that's fine. But know, I don't care what you choose to do in your life, know that there are consequences from it, right? When everyone was mad about whatever, Colin Kaepernick, you know, kneeling at the national anthem, I see you do whatever you want. You just got to be ready for a lot of people not to like it. And Whit Merrifield knew that if he couldn't go play in Toronto, and you're the leader of the team, he was going to catch some crap from a lot of people about it, because this is a baseball team that has not been very good, and he's part of the reason they weren't very good. And
right.
If you don't, and you don't think this team's good enough to get vaccinated for, well, that doesn't look very good.
No.
I do think one benefit, right or wrong, a benefit that Andrew Benintendi had in all of this was that Whit has been the face of this franchise for a long time, so it's expected on any topic, not just trades, not just vaccines, on any topic regarding this
too,
ball team, he's going to be the one that speaks. But I do think, however people felt about Merrifield, I would encourage them to feel the same way about Benintendi. The only difference is Merrifield was in a position to say it in front of the media because it's his position.
Or the other eight people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all of them. You're right.
Our friend David Leske, who we'll hear from tomorrow in the program, tweeted out, said, if Whit is able to play in Toronto's next home game, that means he got the shot on the 29th at the latest, which means he got it at most 29 days after he'd have needed it in order to travel with the Royals. Traded a lot of goodwill for four tiny weeks.
Yeah, it was a bad look for him, but like it has consequences, you know.
Yeah.
You want to get a neck tattoo, you're going to have people say, well, you've got a neck tattoo, and I don't know if I want you to be my president of my bank. It's just there's consequences to whatever you do. And I'm not trying to equate not getting a vaccinated shot or kneeling at the anthem or whatever. Anything you do is going to have consequences with it. And if you're willing to take the consequences, which he was willing to take the consequences for it. He was going to stand on that. And there are plenty of players who have still not gotten shot because they didn't want to. Like there was, you know, the guy for the Phillies, there was a few guys. They were not going to play there. And it wasn't going to be a thing. So it was fine. It was no big deal for him. But it becomes a real thing when it becomes an opportunity that you're going to get traded to someone trying to fight for the playoffs. And if you actually get traded to a team that plays all of their games there, you don't have a choice.
But the risk-reward thing clearly is in operation here. But although I understand, I guess, to a degree, what Merrifield's thinking process and the change in it, if merely the chance of playing in the postseason was enough to get you to change your mind, you really weren't that afraid of it.
Oh, he wasn't afraid. He never said he was afraid.
Or really wasn't that objective. Oh, playoff, sure, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And if you're not...
Maybe he talked to a lot of people. I don't know.
Afraid of it, what the hell didn't you just do it?
Yeah. I don't know. That's for him to live with at this point. That's what it is. But
that is at K Seabolt on Twitter.
Oh, I'll bring it.
I should say at Adrovetta too, because you and I are in full agreement on that.
That's a weird mindset.
Hey, well, listen, people think however they think. That's what they do. And most people, honestly, for whatever they think in their lives, they don't get asked questions about it.
True.
By people, and they put it in the paper. But when you are a public figure for a publicly funded private enterprise in Major League Baseball that plays in a stadium that people pay for and all that stuff, and they pay money to go watch you play, and they're trying to make you pay $20 a month to watch them on Bally's, and you buy the shirts and you do all the stuff, there's a bit of a responsibility to explain yourself sometimes. I'll give him credit. He explained himself the best he could. It's a little convoluted, but he didn't run from it. So, Whit Merrifield, gone to the Blue Jays, and apparently we'll be able to play there. I haven't seen. Is he in the lineup tonight? They're in Minnesota tonight. We'll talk more about that as we move along. Jeff Passan joins us at 5 o'clock. All right, we ran a little long there with Blair Kirchhoff. We got a tight, tight segment here. We've got Jeff Passan coming our way at 5 o'clock. Need to know after that, the kicker. If you missed the last segment, Whit Merrifield has confirmed he is vaccinated. They're in Minnesota tonight, the Blue Jays are. And so
he is in the lineup batting eighth and playing center field.
And he knew this was a possibility.
Yeah.
So he's going to be there on the 12th when they can play in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So he didn't get a shot yesterday when he got traded. He did it in anticipation of being traded.
29th or earlier.
Yeah. So there's that. We'll talk about trade deadline stuff and all that stuff with Jeff Passan. Next, we'll hear next hour from Dayton Moore. Eric Hosmer is at the K. We'll hear all of that stuff in the 5 o'clock hour here on the program.
All right, what member of the 500 Home Run Club hit his first homer off Roger Clemens? Brought to you by Good Sense.